welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back, and it is now or never, and that debt is fraud. Folks, we don't own that debt. We don't owe it. The people that owe that debt or own that debt are those people who actually service the debt. In other words, gave us the money because they should have known that the federal government taking that money was going to spend it on things they had no authority to do. There's been no check on it. And if people want to just throw away money to a reckless spending government, then buyer beware because, oh, our reckless spending government does not put us, we the people and the states, we're not accountable for the debt that they incurred illegitimately. So you can get the people from us. We'll be happy to send you Obama, every single president that's alive, and Pelosi, and everybody that has been involved in government. We'll send them to you, get your pound of flesh out of them. Some of these people, the way they talk, I think they're made of gold, so you might get your money's worth. At least the way they talk, they think they're made of gold. That all being said, we're going through the Constitution, and it's the convention that we're talking about and going into the details of how this evolved. There are certain things that we're going to focus, but there are things that we just may not be able to get to as far as a gold standard on something. For the most part, we have a very accurate picture on probably 90-95% of the Constitution. There's these little things that, because nobody challenged it, what we have to go to understand those little things, and a good example of that is immigration. Immigration was one of those things that it just didn't seem like a big issue. I mean, the states were going to do it, and the states did it. The fact that it wasn't delegated to the federal government is the key thing. And so how were they to do this? And I think the states needed to finally come to a point when things started maturing and we started having lots of states, and then we had several states that would not have ports of entry. So in other words, to get to the immigrant, to get to that state, they would have needed to do something. So all that being said, there are mechanisms, or I should say documents, that I would consider source documents that we would use to kind of dive into that. And those are the early definitions that were created at the time. The more accurate you are is the, you know, when that definition was created originally out the gate. The further you get away from that, when jurists and people try to redefine it, they try to say, well, we think it means this. And, you know, that's not working, so we're going to redefine it to mean this. They don't have that authority. You can't change the law. You can't change the Constitution without getting the parties to agree to that. So it's all about Constitution compliance, and it's all about holding our public servants accountable. The day we start holding every public servant accountable to their oath, and make sure that they're serving the Constitution, not their own agenda, and not, you know, the wants and needs, you know, to give people unconstitutional things like jobs, money. That's not their job. Their job is to make sure that they're representing you on those few powers that you've delegated to them to represent. That's it. With that, we're going to dive into Madison's notes. But before we do, I'm going to dive into a hole, because this show is going to air right before Valentine's. So Valentine's is around the corner, and I know there's a lot of people that, you know, go out of their way. I was one of those guys that got my beautiful bride flowers or plants every 14th of the month, because I said, you know, I love you that much. Valentine's should be every month. That type of thing. But when we really look at love and we look at how commercialized Valentine has gotten, I mean, I think, you know, it's about time to just pull the plug. I don't think that we owe these corporations any money. And I think that what we really owe is our loved ones, ourselves. and how we can do that for each other is probably the real secret of happiness. We, most of the people that listen to this show, most of the people I deal with, are in that stage of life when they're losing friends. And most of the friends that they're losing are not necessarily, and family, not necessarily because of their behavior. In other words, they're losing them because they have passed on. They've been in a tragic accident. The older you get and you go to a class reunion, the more people aren't there. And, you know, that those who pass list keeps getting longer and longer. And they say that, you know, what's that saying about he who lives longest, you know, lasts best or whatever. The best way of getting back at somebody is just being healthy and living long. Those types of things. But what I wanted to impress, because if you've been involved in your marriage for as long as I have, and there's people that have been involved in their marriage much longer than I have, the marriage and our time and the partnership should not give us license to constantly, you know, do the tune-ups and the oiling, the lube job, you know, the necessary maintenance that is required that I'm going to quote-unquote love, because there's too many, I'm taking this time right now, friends, because I see too often that when people go, it's not like it was planned. There's very few people, you know, and I don't relish anybody passing. But those people that pass because they went to work and somebody crossed the line, or they were on the way home at nighttime and something happened, you know, it's a tragic accident. And I have seen, and as a matter of fact, it was just recently in the past 8 years, I saw, and I knew this couple, there was this volatility, you know, between them, and, you know, he was kind of a free-spirited, and she was kind of, I don't want to say she was controlling, but, you know, she wanted to be a little more serious about being on places on time and so forth. And it was going to church. She asked him to be on time. And he was running a little late, and he was riding his motorcycle, and she yelled at him, you know, when she's leaving, "Don't be late this time." He rode his motorcycle, and he was going so fast, he got what they call the death wobble. Because he was going that fast, he just lost full control of his motorcycle, went right into a light pole, dead on the spot. And so don't let these things happen to where you live the rest of your life with regret, with the fact that you were mad at them. You caused them to possibly rush and live with those self-appointing guilts and so forth. You know, when I've lost pets, and I've lost pets because of, you know, I wasn't understanding what I was doing or what have you, and that really plays hard on me. That's just a pet. It's not that I have not been responsible for people's lives, but we have to recognize that we have a responsibility for ourselves and for those whom we love. And we need to make sure that every time we take the time to, you know, have a prayer, you know, make sure you express, and when anger comes, open the doors of forgiveness and repentance so that they can be put aside as fast as possible, because you have no idea when somebody's going to leave. But if you count on working these things out on Valentine's Day, one day out of the year, then it's that old adage: failing to plan is planning to fail. If you've ever experienced and seen somebody that has lost somebody that, you know, they were in the midst of an argument or fight or what have you, it's not a pretty scene. Don't let that happen. As a matter of fact, try to keep people, try to spread the word that we need to maintain love, and that love, I'll just say love for each other, paramount. We need to make sure that that is the utmost importance in the household and in the life. You want to make sure that Satan has no, you know, toehold in your house, and you want to make sure that when you're engaging, you're being, you know, fair, just, objective, and so forth, and likewise. And if you've got problems, if you know, because marriages, you get problems, get help. Get either, you know, a therapist, get a counselor, go see your pastor, get help. Get a good, objective, third-party person that truly wants to help both. And if at any point in time, one of the two of you feel like, this person's not being objective, I don't feel like they're seeing it my way, then get another one. And keep working on it so that you can work through the problems, because there was a reason why you made the commitment. And this is, you know, when you got this license to get married, if you can remember the times when you, just because you were still in discovery mode and you stayed up and you talked all night and you didn't realize, shoot, we talked all night. Now we got to go to work. That was the point when love was its brightest in your relationship. But it doesn't mean that it wasn't the strongest. You can make it the strongest in the latter days of your relationship if you're doing the right things, if you're continually following up and recognizing the importance that they are in your life and you are in their life. And as a matter of fact, I remember my father before he passed away. He pulled me to the side and he goes, son, I want you to know that I love your mother, and I love her in a way that I couldn't even understand 5-10 years ago. And so if we do those things, then I honestly don't think the need for your participation in Valentine's Day means anything. I'm not saying, and you know, I don't want the flower companies to boycott me. All I'm saying is that we need to do this every day. It's not a job, it's a responsibility. And if you look at it that way, then do your best, because your name is on this. You know, I believe in putting a person's name on the product they build. Over time, when they come back and they see that product, they see their name there, and if they rush through it, they'll look at that and they go, you know, I'm not really proud. Can I take my name off? Nope. Yeah, that's yours. You did that. And that's what you have in your relationship. That both of your names are on this. And so if you want to take pride in the quality of what you're doing and what you're doing together, you have to work together. And you have to be willing to come to the table in working out problems. And if you ever have problems and you do go to the table, come with everything. In other words, you know, don't take ownership of your own actions. Just don't come and point the finger at somebody. It takes two. And everybody did something to get to that table. So make sure you bring what you know, what caused you, what caused her to be there. When you do that, that means that you're open and willing to really discuss all sides of the issue. That's when you actually have true negotiations, or I should say, that's when you truly work the problems out. With that, I'm not a professional counselor. All I want to say is don't let this time waste, because just because the day of love out of the year may be this weekend, it doesn't mean that you're relieved of the rest of the year. We all have responsibilities, and I see this. We just become so indifferent regarding the most important things, and I'll even say this. I see it all the time that people will, you know, listen to friends. They'll listen to people that have no vested interest in them. But when their spouse, their husband or wife, says, you know, you ought to do this, and they don't do it, then somebody else comes along and tells them you ought to do that, and then they do it because that person said it. That's got to be the biggest stab in the back, the biggest slap in the face you could do. Value, listen to, and adhere. You know, especially if it is good advice. If you're actually going to follow on it, God help you if you're going to follow on it from somebody else when you know that she or he has told you, this is what we need to do, you got to do this, blah, blah, blah. So folks, take responsibility. It's as we talk about the importance of holding our public servants accountable, we need to be accountable in these relationships. And the most important relationship you have is your relationship with Christ. And paramount to that is your relationship with your spouse. So, anyway, with that, welcome back, Sean. And while Sean looks around and...
I'm there.
So, you know, folks, it happens every time. When you don't have somebody to, you know, mute you or unmute you, you forget you did it. Anyway, so how's it going? I'm sorry for taking the time. I usually don't talk about this important subject.
I think it was worth the time. And remember, that's the first thing that God did with man was create the first institution he created.
Yes.
The first covenant he created was between us and our spouses.
Yes.
And that's the way he created us was intended for that purpose. And I think that figuring out how to make the most of that brings us closer to Christ.
Right. You know, and because I see the hardships, I see I'll call it empty hearts with families or couples that can't have kids. And they really want, they're good people, they deserve kids. But they want to have their own kids, and they just feel, they go down the wrong roads, they go down the wrong paths. And, you know, I think of, and I don't know where it's at, but I remember in the New Testament, there is a scripture where I think Christ was speaking that said, I know what you suffer. And if you can endure to the end, you will be blessed for the suffering. I will, you know, bless you for that. And so, anyway, I need to look that up. I need to find the time to kind of scour and find that one scripture, because it really just hits the nail on the head in helping people understand that, you know, a lot of times the suffering we go through is because he wants us to learn certain lessons.
It's either a lesson or a blessing.
Yeah, I mean, it took me long time to become patient. I mean, I was not a patient man. I was notorious for being impatient with people. anyway, not that I'm perfect with my patience, but I'm a lot better, and that's strictly because of my beautiful bride. But anyway, we're covering Madison's Notes, and we are on... Let me see here. It's definitely June, and it is June 13th, Wednesday, and you're going through the report of the committee to the body of the whole, and they're going through these resolutions, and we kind of stopped on this, the executive eligibility for that and holding them accountable and being removed for impeachment and conviction of malpractice or neglect of duty. And you mentioned you like the language of that and so forth. And so we kind of went down a rat hole and didn't finish. But so we're on resolution 10. So let's pick it up from there, if that's okay.
Resolution 10, resolved that the national executive shall have a right to negative any legislative act which shall not be afterwards passed unless by two-thirds of each branch of the national legislature.
Now, one of the things, because I've been kind of chomping on the bit, and I've always had this problem, this needs an amendment. I believe that when there needs to be a death gauntlet to law. In other words, I think that it's important that we allow our legislators to create the laws that we've given them the authority to do. But if they're trying to create a law that would be a violation of the Constitution, then there needs to be what I would call a death gauntlet on that type of law. If that was the case, then I think that Congress would have needed to create a repository of laws that could never be. That the president should be able to actually state that this right here, the law that you create, and let me give you a good example, the bonus bill. when Congress came to James Madison and asked to basically get him to sign a bill so they could spend tax dollars to improve highways and waterways. And he said that we don't have the authority to do that. We need to amend the Constitution. And so go get an amendment. And I'll be happy, you know, that'll be the best thing we can do. Then we can do all these great things for the nation. So he charged them to go get that. Now, we got a video on this. It's the three presidential vetoes of the Department of Transportation, or DOT. It's on the Reclaiming the Republic YouTube channel. If you want to, you can't find it, just go to Reclaiming the Republic, and on the right side of my menu button, just click on the YouTube channel, Reclaiming the Republic YouTube, and that'll take you there, and then you'll be able to watch the three presidential vetoes of the Department of DOT. And at the end of that, we actually give you the citations if you want. I think we should have it on the academic source documents. And by the way, folks, if I don't have a document up there that you're looking for, send me an email and say, hey, where is this? Because it needs to be there. If we've covered it, it should be up there. So I kind of look, and like I said, I go through these IT pukes, you know, they fail me, and I have to fire them, and I got to look for a new one. And I constantly get, you know, slack jaw IT guys working for me. So anyway, with that, we should be able to then, with the Congress or the state legislature, when a bill is killed because it has been laid out how it violates the Constitution, because that power is not delegated, then it should go into a repository, that there should never be a bill, you know, because you have these LSOs, you have these bureaucracies, these lawyer, you know, the League of Lawyers that, you know, make sure that they're serving themselves and, you know, playing the nuances on laws and so forth. They don't check on constitutionality. Get rid of the LSO and use the Constitutional Compliance Committee to make sure that no bill goes on that floor that will be known to violate the Constitution. And they should be looking at it and say, you know what, we don't have the authority in the Constitution to pass this bill. It can't even go onto the floor. And the person that wrote that should actually be, you know, admonished and say, don't do this again. And I think that, you know, if the same person keeps on trying to push the boundaries, then they need to be probably censured after three times or what have you. They still keep on doing it. Then I think that is one of those things that they need to probably look at expelling them and saying, you can't be a legislator because you're constantly trying to get us to do things we're not supposed to do. You know, it's like having Eddie Haskell, you know, tagging around, if you know who he is. But anyway, the troublemaker. So if this happens, then this repository would basically create this, and Congress would not ever be able to pass a law that would be unconstitutional. This gives the president not only this negative power, but the ability to protect our government and the people. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So what do you think of that for an amendment? I mean, is that just like a no-brainer amendment?
I think it is, and I also think that if the people were more informed, that the problem with the legislators or representatives continuing to bring up unconstitutional bills, they would take care of that in the election process.
You would think so. Eventually, but but here's the problem. The voters don't even know the bills that are even being considered.
Right. You're right about that.
And so because they vote for these guys, they trust them. It's like they have a blind trust for the party. They vote for the guys in the party. And then they, you know, whoever wins the beauty pageant, you know, becomes the guy that they continually vote for until the guys really piss them off. Like, and sadly, it's because they got affected financially, not because they lost liberties or these other things, but it's, wow, I'm going to pay taxes? You're raising my taxes? So anyway, we're going into a break. We'll be right back after this break, and we'll get into Resolution 11. But before we do, I do want to ask Sean one more time, why doesn't the Convention of State folks say, how come we don't have this kind of amendment, where this is something that's needed in the Constitution? We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I know I just pulled a film at 11 on you. And so with that, no, I'm not advocating at all for a convention. But I am advocating of actually having the conversation of what would actually help us. What changes to the Constitution would make our constitutional republic stronger and more confined so the government can't get out of control? And so this is one of those amendments, and Sean, don't you think so? I believe that if the conversation actually got out to where everybody started hearing this, I believe everybody would say, just like allowing people to vote age 18, that didn't go into a convention. Everybody listened to it, and the logic was, hey, if you could go deploy, you know, across the world and get killed, you should be able to have some say in, you know, whether that person saying you can go to war, you know, represents you or not. And so yeah, the arguments stand for themselves. Now, I've actually spoken out against letting 18-year-olds vote. But when it comes to representation, I'm more liberal on allowing an 18-year-old to choose their representative. But that's it. An 18-year-old, unless they own property, should not be able to vote on a levy or a, you know, a bond or anything like that. They should not be able to vote on amendments to the Constitution or initiatives. Actually, we the people should not be writing our own laws, period. But I believe that, you know, we have a representative government, and if you become an adult, you should have say on who represents you in the county, in the state, and in the federal government. That's it. Maybe in the city council, whatever. I mean, I believe in a republican form of government, everybody should have some say in voting for their representative as far as citizens go. If you're 18 years old, blah, blah, blah. But I'm not an advocate of just letting anybody vote. As a matter of fact, on property, issues of property, changing zones and so forth to allow this zone to become residential instead of commercial or vice versa or whatever, or taxes, bonds, I believe that the only people that should be able to vote are residents or property holders or people that have, you know, mortgages. In other words, they've got skin in the game. And they're the ones that should actually have say whether they're going to be hit with a tax. Not all the freeloaders, or I should say, poking people in the eye there, those people who are not willing to take the risk of going in and buying a home or whatever, a business. And the risk takers should be able to protect themselves. So, because that's what happens. That's how democracy ends up, you know, getting forced upon us, because we allow everybody to be able to have say in something. And this is tantamount to stocks. If you own Ford stock and you have the opportunity to vote in the Ford Motor Company Corporation, I should say the Ford Corporation governance, You don't have a right to vote in the General Motors corporate governance unless you have stock in them too. In other words, if you don't have stock in it, you don't have stake, you don't have any dog in the fight, you shouldn't be voting. You don't have a right to vote on everything. If that's the case, if the court wants to go down that path and literally rewrite our laws and do those things, because I don't put it past them, then they might as well just open up all of our elections to every person in the world, because they're potential citizens. And then we should just open up the corporate governance to all people, because we could possibly buy or ride in that vehicle. We could see a Bugatti drive by. Not a Bugatti. Now, I don't think Bugatti is a public traded company. I think Ferrari might be. But there are, you know, Mercedes is. A lot of these manufacturers and all these companies, if they're publicly traded, doesn't mean that you have a right to say who the governance of that company is going to be. Now, I do understand that they're an enemy. Corporations and so forth, they are an enemy. But we can't be attacking them that way. What we have to do with corporations is a completely different issue, and I've got to talk about it. The states need to take their sovereignty back so that they can choose how they treat each corporation that wants to operate in their state, period, and not let the federal government say, we're allowing them to do this, this, and this, and just run ruckshod over everybody. Anyway, or all the states. So let's get back to Resolution 11.
All right, we're on 11?
Yeah, you just did 10.
Resolved that a national judiciary be established to consist of one supreme tribunal, the judges of which to be appointed by the second branch of the national legislature, to hold their offices during good behavior, and to receive punctually at stated times a fixed compensation for their services, in which no increase or diminution should be made, so as to affect the persons actually in office at the time of such increase or diminution.
Okay, so they're basically establishing a supreme tribunal permanently. See, in the Articles of Confederation, they did not have a permanent supreme tribunal. Continental Congress was. Because they felt that there would be enough cases to keep the federal judiciary busy. The reality is, once they changed the jurisdiction of the federal court with the 11th Amendment, they had to go out of their way to start pulling in, because they were underutilized. And they started seeking and expanding their jurisdiction unconstitutionally, which is why they're in front of every argument in every case possible, when technically most all these cases, like elections, should be in front of your legislators, Congress. Congress, for the federal elections, has the responsibility of going through, validating and confirming and closing the deal on elections, not the court. We'll give you proof of that later, but bottom line, the judiciary was being established because they wanted to make sure that they had the availability of the best minds, I guess, so that they were there on call instead of, oh, well, we need to get this, oh, he's already got a case, he's trying something else, and he's unavailable. And I'm pretty sure that had to have been a problem with Continental Congress, trying to, when they needed to call forth a tribunal to resolve problems, you know, getting somebody to do the job, you know, was probably very problematic for probably a plethora of reasons. Anyway, the 12th resolution.
Resolved that the national legislature be empowered to appoint inferior tribunals.
Okay. Which means that tribunals that can try federal cases outside of the Supreme Court, so that the Supreme Court, because they're going to be super busy, so the Supreme Court could focus on slaying dragons, and these inferior tribunals would basically provide justice where it shouldn't need another appeal to go to the Supreme Court. 13.
13, resolved that the jurisdiction of the national judiciary shall extend to all cases which respect the collection of the national revenue, impeachments of any national officers, and questions which involve the national peace and harmony.
Now, those are kind of generic and general, but it doesn't add to any real focus, if you know what I mean. And so, in a way, it seems nondescript, but that involve the national peace and harmony, that's almost like general jurisdiction. It opens the door for lots of things that we would not want the federal judiciary to be involved in. Okay, so 14.
Resolved that that provision ought to be made for the admission of states lawfully arising within the limits of the United States, whether from a voluntary junction of government, in territory, or otherwise, with the consent of a number of voices in the national legislature, less than the whole.
Okay, so 15, unless you got a comment on that one.
No, I thought the states were sovereign, and, well, we don't have the Constitution yet. So.
Right. We don't have it, but right here at this point in time, okay. So right. At this point in time, in the admission of states lawfully arising within the limits of the United States, that to form this territory or junction, otherwise the consent of voices in the national legislature. So, in other words, this is kind of the language that they talked about in having a minimized voice in the national affairs, these new states and territories. But they didn't really talk about admitting states. They just talked about the resolve that a provision ought to be made for admission of states. Okay. All right. So they still hadn't gotten there. And I think that's when they finally get there, the Congress will admit new states into the Union. Was this a power or was this a responsibility?
Responsibility.
There you go. So if it's a power, then they could start creating laws regarding it. If right. not, then, and that's why Article 3 or Article 4, Section 3 was worded the way it was. So, okay, so 15.
Resolved that provision ought to be made for the continuance of Congress and their authorities and privileges until a given day after reform of the Articles of Union shall be adopted and for the completion of all their engagements.
Okay, interesting. They're looking for just a putting words on a piece of paper that would only be of value until the transition is done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, is the impetus for the statements in the Constitution about all things from the Articles of Confederation are carried over?
So, okay, so we'll get into those because I think the language, we did cover that because there are certain debts and there are certain things and obligations and so forth to foreign nations that were maintained. But no engagements and laws and acts and everything else that the Articles of Confederation had done, you know, like the Northwest Ordinance. The Northwest Ordinance was superseded by the Constitution because in the Constitution it laid out how states would be admitted into the Union. So that entire Northwest Ordinance was worthless.
Right.
Okay. But this line...
That was kind of what I was thinking, is things like obligations they had.
Yeah, no, but this line right here is basically saying that, you know, when the Constitution gets ratified, if the Constitution is ratified, then there will be this provision that, you know, Continental Congress will slowly, you know, shift over and give us their pens and give us what they have, you know, and technically, this right here becomes a problem, because what if a couple of states want to maintain the Continental Congress? Then they have to pay for it, and this new government will not be able to, you know, say, hey, you got to give us all this stuff. Then they can give them what they're not using. I mean, there should be some level of cooperation, but I will say this, that if Pennsylvania ratifies and comes into the Constitution, and Rhode Island and Carolina and let's just say New Hampshire, three states that are, you know, really separated, decide to join or stay in the Articles of Confederation. They say, we're not going to be a part of that. Then everything that they've got in Pennsylvania, where Continental Congress is meeting, has to change. And they now have to go in and actually change the Articles of Confederation to accommodate this fractured Confederacy. If there's, you know, headstrong and saying, we're going to maintain this. We don't care about this. We're not going down that evil path. Right. And so they would have to make provisions for vacating as well. And I think that these types of things are an administrative line that should actually be covered by the necessary and proper, you know, not the clause in Article 1, Section 8, but something similar to that, to empower Continental Congress as well as this new forming government to work out, you know, an amenable transition to ensure, you know, that the new government doesn't have to go out and buy, use, whatever. Anything that's usable that can be transferred over because they're not having as many states in the Confederation anymore, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, hopefully that all makes sense. But to put it in the Constitution, I mean, there maybe needs to be a line for the transition, but it's one of those lines that would actually, you know, say this, you know, once the transition is complete, this line is to be removed. Or for historical purposes, it is no longer, you know, of any importance or significance. It has been completed. So anyway, does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's one of those administrative things that you kind of want to put it in there, but it has no impact once the new government has stood up and everything's moving forward. So anyway, go ahead to the next one.
Resolved that a Republican Constitution and its existing laws ought to be guaranteed to each state by the United States.
Okay, so what is that guaranteed to each state?
A Republican Constitution.
Uh-huh, and its existing laws ought to be guaranteed to each state by the United States. And I'm going, well, you know, the wording is really cumbersome. And I think, you know, to me, I understand what they're trying to say, but they made it seem like, well, the United States Constitution should be the Constitution that's used for every state. And in other words, this becomes a state document instead of a, help me out here, a state document as well as a federal Constitution, federal document, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it kind of confuses you because it's referencing something that's existing.
Uh-huh.
Where is it? Where is the reference?
Well, I think I think that what they're talking about is the U.S. Constitution. And because the plan, again, they're still working on the original plan that the states become administrative and that they're going to wipe out those governments, everything. And that's why all of this stuff evolves. Go ahead, the next one.
Okay. 17, resolved that provision ought to be made for the amendment of the Articles of Union whensoever it shall seem necessary.
Okay, next one.
18, resolved that the legislative, executive, and judiciary powers within the several states ought to be bound by oath to support the Articles of Union.
Okay.
19, resolved that the amendments which shall be offered to Confederation by the Convention ought at a proper time or times after the approbation of Congress to be submitted to an assembly or assemblies recommended by the several legislatures to be expressly chosen by the people to consider and decide thereon.
Okay. So in other words, kind of like a convention, right? Or a confederation by the convention ought to. Anyway, okay. So that is the current state of what they see they're creating, that they're going to be doing these things from Resolution 1 all the way down to Resolution 19. And so with that, now what we're going to cover is we're actually going to go down to Friday the 15th, and we're going to cover the New Jersey plan, which is literally the first thing that you find when you go to Friday the 15th, right there, the New Jersey plan. and then it's Mr. Patterson, and so forth. And you know what? We got Tammy that just snuck in here. I don't know if you knew Tammy snuck in.
Yes, sir.
Yes. So welcome, well, Tammy.
Very sneaky.
Yeah, she can be that way. I mean, she's way up high in those mountains in the Rockies there, or what have you. Maybe, now we're just calling her out because she probably snuck in and maybe she's out getting herself a snack while she's waiting for the show. So I have no idea. Anyway, she will be with us in the next show, though, folks, because she's just showing up early, which would be our Monday show. Anyway, let's dive into the New Jersey plan. Now, this is a plan that is being presented as either an alternative or things to amend the current plan. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so let's go ahead and dive into this.
The New Jersey plan. Mr. Patterson laid before the convention the plan which he said several of the deputations wished to be substituted in place of that proposed by Mr. Randolph. After some little discussion of the most proper mode of giving it a fair deliberation, it was agreed that it should be referred to a committee of the whole, and that in order to place the two plans in due comparison, the others should be recommitted. At the earnest desire of Mr. Lansing and some other gentlemen, it was also agreed that the convention should not go into the committee of the whole on the subject till tomorrow, by which delay the friends of the plan proposed by Mr. Patterson would be better prepared to explain and support it, and all would have an opportunity of taking copies. Propositions from New Jersey moved by Mr. Patterson were in the words following.
Go ahead.
One, resolve that the Articles of Confederation ought to be so revised, corrected, and enlarged as to render the federal constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the Union.
Okay. So,
Two,
let me ask you this. Do you kind of see what that one line does?
Yeah, it gives them, they're making a whole new plan.
Pretty much. In other words, they're basically saying, well, it's all nice and good, but don't be changing the form of government. We're just going to basically correct, enlarge, and do those things that would adequately tend to the exigencies of the Union. Okay, so go ahead. Let's keep going, because I see this already. Correct. Go ahead.
Two, resolve that in addition to the powers vested in the United States in Congress by the present existing Articles of Confederation, they be authorized to pass acts for raising a revenue by levying a duty or duties on all goods or merchandises of foreign growth or manufacture imported into any part of the United States by stamps on paper, vellum or parchment, and by a postage on all letters or packages passing through the General Post Office, to be applied to such federal purposes as they shall deem proper and expedient, to make rules and regulations for the collection thereof, and the same from time to time, to alter and amend in such manner as they shall think proper, to pass acts for the regulation of trade and commerce as well with foreign nations as with each other, provided that all punishments, fines, forfeitures, and penalties to be incurred for contravening such acts, rules, and regulations shall be adjudged by the common law judiciaries of the state, in which any offense contrary to the true intent and meaning of such acts, rules, and regulations shall have been committed or perpetrated, with liberty of commencing in the first instance all suits and protections for that purpose in the superior common law judiciary in such state, subject nevertheless for the correction of all errors, both in law and fact, in rendering judgment to an appeal to the judiciary of the United States.
Okay. All right. So it seems to me like they're really going back to a magistrate form of government. They don't want to change the government. They don't want to have a bicameral legislative body. They don't want to have a separate executive and a separate judiciary. At least that's how it seems. So let's keep going to Resolution 5, or 3, I mean.
Resolved that whenever requisitions shall be necessary, instead of the rule for making requisitions mentioned in the Articles of Confederation, the United States and Congress be authorized to make such requisitions in proportion to the whole number of white and other free citizens and inhabitants of every age, sex, and condition, including those bound to servitude for a term of years, and three-fifths of all persons not comprehended in the foregoing description, except Indians not paying taxes, that if such requisitions be not complied with in the time specified therein, to direct the collection thereof in the non-complying states, and for that purpose to devise and pass acts directing and authorizing the same, provided that none of the powers hereby vested in the United States in Congress shall be exercised without the consent of at least blank states, and in that proportion if the number of confederated states should be hereafter be increased or diminished.
Okay, so they're leaving the blank there because they know that that's the problem. That's one of the big problems. Okay, so four.
It's just crazy, and I like to take time to think about it for a minute.
Sure.
The fact that they didn't know if there was going to be 13 states in this confederation.
Uh-huh.
That's just a crazy thought to think about where they were at that point and uh-huh. where we are now.
Right, right. Well, so there could have been a fracturing of the Union. But I think the prevailing belief by the time they were halfway through, the prevailing belief was when they had these, because I don't know about all the participants. I do know that the people from Virginia were very well aware of what was going on, and same thing with, you know, many of the others. But I'm not sure how many of the delegates from some of these other states kind of understood certain things about the Union, that the South, because of its slavery, would not be able to have a true militia, because that would require that they would have to import people to just live and do things that wouldn't be farming, because if you're farming, then you have slaves. And if you have slaves, then you're not free to let the slaves, you know, run the farm for you. It's a hostile work environment by design, which means that your focus, your guns, and your force is in making sure that your slaves are there. We ran out of time, and I guess that's a good thing. But when we look at some of the conversations that start to occur, I think halfway through, people started realizing we really do need the Union, because we need the money from the South and we need the people to fight from the North, and we all kind of need each other. So with that, and we'll get to those conversations. Believe me, they're here. We've already got them highlighted. So we will get to that. This will probably take a good time. You know, we'll probably get into March and maybe to April before we get to the ratification phase. But all this being said, folks, these documents are so critical in understanding the Constitution. I'm J.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.